Create history with every stride at the L&T Sea Bridge Marathon, a unique opportunity for runners to conquer a course over the sea at the L&T Sea Bridge Marathon, a breathtaking 42-kilometer route on India's longest sea bridge, the Atal Bihari Vajpayee Siri Nava Sheva Atal Setu, on 18th February, L&T Sea Bridge Marathon, in association with MMRDA and the Times of India. Medical partner, Zynova Shalby Multi-Specialty Hospital. Protein partner, Way 91.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road. And those who travel it wind up in the gutter, the prison or the grave. There's no other end. But they never learn.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's transcribed story, The Cloak of Kamehameha.
Message that was delivered by a repulsively wide-awake boy missing a two-front-row center. Arrived at 6 in the a.m. and had come in two parts. The first, scrawled in black ink on a wrinkled piece of paper, said, "Marlowe, get hold of a taxicab. Pose as the driver yourself, and at exactly 8 o'clock this morning, come past 8840 North Ogden Drive." Signed, Pollard Schindler. The second half had made more sense. It was printed in neat letters on neater green paper. And under an engraving of Benjamin Franklin read, 100 silver dollars, payable to the bearer on demand. So at exactly 8 o'clock, I was behind the wheel of a hired cab, leather jacket, peaked cap, toothpick and all, and within hay taxi distance of number 8840. Mr. Pollard Schindler, a round man in square clothes with haircut to match, was not late.
You there, taxi, Rick.
Yes, sir, cab.
Of course. Why do you think I'm shouting my head off? I want to go to the International Airport. Do you understand? The International Airport at Inglewood.
Okay, Inglewood. International Airport it is.
Now, look, the meter. Quick, put the flag down. Every minute I'm being watched.
Huh? Oh, yeah. Watched by who, Mr. Schindler?
I don't know. Now, listen carefully, Marlowe. Later, you are to go to the Halle Moana Hotel and wait for a young lady named Lene Collier.
Uh-huh.
Then, at the hour she designates, you go to her house, number 44 Diamond Head Circle, and pick up the cloak.
Now, wait a minute. Halle Moana, Diamond... What is it? The hotel isn't by any chance in Hawaii, is it?
Didn't I mention this in my notes?
Oh, you didn't. Or did you mention picking up a cloak?
That just proves I haven't been myself ever since yesterday. Yesterday, I received this anonymous letter that's postmarked Honolulu. All it says is, Kamehameha's cloak of golden feathers will bring no less than death.
Oh, great.
Marlowe, have you ever been to the island?
Yeah, twice. Once on business and once pleasure.
But then surely you've heard people speak of King Kamehameha.
Yeah, I think I do. He was back around the 1780s, right?
Yeah.
Big organizer, conquered Oahu by driving the defenders over the cliff that divides the island in two in the...
Pali.
Oh, yeah, Pali.
Now, Marlowe, the feathered cloak that Kamehameha wore was about 100 square feet and every inch of it a golden yellow feather.
Uh-huh.
And valued at more than $500,000.
Hey, how come?
The feathers.
Oh, the feathers. Yeah.
They are from the now extinct black mama bird, Marlowe. There was only one yellow feather on each bird.
Well, I could explain why they're now extinct. But don't tell me that all this is a game of Collier to Marlowe to Schindler with a cloak that belongs to the museum.
Oh, no, Marlowe, it isn't. With the cloak you speak of. But Lani Collier has another one. Less valuable, of course. It's 1/4 the size.
Oh.
But it also belonged to the king. And it also is made of the priceless feathers.
And is this her property to have and to hold legal like?
Yes. Lani is wealthy. About 25. Went to fashionable schools here in California. And as a result, cares more about fun and pretty clothes than she does priceless heirlooms.
I can't understand that.
So, for $50,000, I have bought the cloak to resell to a New York millionaire for almost twice that sum.
Eh?
He loves the island, Lord. Marlowe.
Huh?
I was right. I'm still being followed. Don't look back.
Drive faster?
No, do nothing. This is exactly as I want it. Now, whoever it is will follow me, not you. And when I am in Honolulu, they will still follow me.
Well, I take care of the business on hand.
Yes. Now, there's a reservation for you on the next plane. So, after you leave me and collect your cab fare, which will be $500, you drive away. Then later, Marlowe, get back here, aboard your plane and underway.
And tonight, when I've got the cloak?
Take it back to your hotel room at the Halle Moana and sit on it hard. Because unless I am a complete success as a decoy, you will have your share of trouble too, I'm sure. But Marlowe, from what specific direction it will come, I do not know.
I got the 500 bucks to cover expenses for my Honolulu trip and was told to keep the change. Back in my apartment, I packed, got another cab, set International Airport, Inglewood, and settled back to think about the crossroads of the Pacific. There I was wrong, because in the next minute and those that followed, everything was done the hard way. First, we ran out of gas, then got tied up in a traffic jam, and after that, got stopped for speeding, all of which added up to me at the airport just in time to watch my plane take off without me. Later, when I told a cherubic clerk in a gray flannel and insipid smile that my name was Philip Marlowe and that I wanted a reservation on the next flight, which was leaving in an hour, things got even worse.
You can't be Philip Marlowe, sir. That is not the Philip Marlowe who was on flight 21 that just left.
You have a reason for saying that, huh?
I most certainly do. There were 36 seats on that plane, sir, and when she took off, all 36 were full. I know, I checked them myself, and I don't make mistakes.
Well, bully to you, boy. But I happen to be both Philip Marlowe and the man who was supposed to be on that plane. Also, Buster, I'm just about out of patience. How do I get on the next plane or don't I? Come on, I can't stand indecision.
Mr. Marlowe, I think it can be arranged.
That's better.
As a matter of fact, I'm almost sure of it.
An hour later, the last of California had slipped over the horizon. And there was only clear sky ahead.
Oh, I began to relax.
My mind drifted pleasantly. Frosted Hawaiian punches. Warm white beaches. And lovely hula hands. When I opened my eyes again, Diamond Head was in front of us. And majestic in the red glow of the evening sun that gave all of the lush Moana Valley I could see a texture of thick velvet. We landed like the airport was made of marshmallows. And a half hour later, I was in the lobby of the Halle Moana Hotel. It was cushioned rattan and Philippine mahogany over cool tile. And everywhere, laughing, sunburned people wearing anything from Catalina swimsuits to prefabricated hula skirts. So smiling both inside and out, I worked briskly to the reservation desk and told a good-looking Hawaiian in white flannel that I was Philip Marlowe. But at his reply, I stopped smiling both inside and out.
But, sir, your reservation was taken 2 hours ago. There must be some mistake.
Some mistake?
You are Philip Marlowe of Los Angeles, sir.
Yes, so right. And look, I've been through this before today because of what I thought was an error.
Due to what, sir?
Nothing. Yeah, I'll talk to you later. There was a large circle of mirror on the wall behind the clerk. And even as we had talked, I caught the reflection of a beautiful tan girl in cocoa brown suit, white pearls, and no stockings. With the mention of my name and then a take that made her long blonde hair whip straight out. When she saw me watching her, she pivoted sharply on a spiked heel and hurried toward the lanai under the banyan tree, where there was Hawaiian music and a lot of different-looking people drinking at glass-topped tables under a three-quarter moon. I stayed near the reservation desk long enough to light a cigarette. Then I followed her. She was seated away from the lobby entrance, and on a hunch that she just might be Lani Kalia, I started for an empty table next to her. But a middle-aged Chinese and gay gabardine, Panama to match, slipped into the chair that I was after. So I forgot about being subtle, and addressing her as Mrs. Kalia, introduced myself as an old and dear friend of Pollard Schindler's, one Leland Dunn.
Well, this is a pleasant surprise, Mr. Dunn. But tell me, how did you know what I looked like?
Well, Paula Schindler's accent doesn't hamper his vocabulary, Miss Collier.
Oh.
He used the right adjectives, believe me.
I'd love to. But I can't, Mr. Dunn. Because Pollard Schindler never saw me in his life. All our business was done by telephone.
Okay, my mistake. I'm Philip Marlowe, Lenny, and I want to know when we rendezvous at 44 Diamond Head Circle for the cloak of Kamehameha.
The cloak? Look, you're no more Philip Marlowe than you are Leland Dunn. And if you need a reason, it's because I just left Philip Marlowe on stage.
Now, look, baby, there's only one Marlowe. That's me. I can prove it.
I'll bet you can. Forged papers and all. I've already been warned to watch for imposters, so quit wasting both your time and mine and get out of my way. I've got things to do.
Now, wait a minute, Lonnie. Listen.
What for? Proof that you're actually Kamehameha himself? No thanks, mister. Goodbye.
Now, I had two clues. One, an obvious party who'd assume the name of Philip Marlowe, and the other, Lonnie Collier. Less obvious, but more intriguing. So figuring the road company Marlowe would keep, I followed Lonnie, who by this time was getting into a long yellow convertible. Before I got to her, she lurched from the curb, so I ran across the street to what I thought was a taxi. But I was wrong, because it turned out to be a chauffeured limousine and being helped in by a small, swarthy item of dubious lineage in a wrinkled cotton uniform. Was the Chinese in gay gabardine in Panama to match, who'd been sitting near us in the lanai. What counted more was that he obviously sensed my problem.
You wish to follow the girl, sir?
Yeah, you know, it's a lover's spat. You know what I mean.
I think so. Jonah, quickly.
Yes, sir.
You know where she's going, sir?
I'm not sure. Maybe Diamond Head Circle.
Maybe it's leading, sir.
Oh, well, then let's make it Diamond Head Circle. Is there a faster way there, a shortcut?
Oh, yes, there is. Jonah, okay. No.
Which means what?
Means, never mind Diamond Head Circle. Drive fast to the factory instead. And do not move, Mr. Marlowe.
Marlowe? Oh, heavy artillery. Okay, Fu Manchu, what's with the factory?
You out of the way until the cloak of Kamehameha is mine.
Which won't work, believe it or not, clever one. There's another Philip Marlowe who at the moment is a lot closer to that collection of fancy feathers than either of us.
You lie. A stupid bid for freedom. A bid that will not get you any...
Yolo! A truck! Look out!
As we hit, I slapped at his gun, then jerked the handle of the door and jumped. When I got to my feet, I was on the sidewalk and bruised, but better off than the China boy who was draped over the back of the front seat. A crowd that included a towering Hawaiian policeman who promptly told mine host to shut up, gathered in a hurry, so I ran for a cab, gave the driver $10, the address I wanted, and took off. The street on which Lonnie Collier lived was a neat curving strip that rose sharply from sea level up into the shadow of Diamond Head itself. We were there in less than 10 minutes. Finding number 44 was something else. And another 30 minutes disappeared before we finally parked away from the place, which was glass and Kona wood, tucked deep behind a thick grove of date palms. I told the driver to back down the hill without using his motor. Then I slipped into the grounds and carefully moved toward the house until what I thought was the trunk of another palm stepped into my path. Fast.
Stop where you are.
At the top, which was over 6.5 feet, there was a shock of flaming red hair. The whole frame was half covered in dirty yellow shirt, once upon a time white ducks and battered brown sandals.
Who are you?
Someone with an appointment to see Miss Collier. Why? You belong to this place?
Yes, and this place belongs to me as well. All of it, Miss Collier included. She's mine to protect, you understand that? Malahini.
Malawitch?
Malahini, greenhorn tourist, a kind that I hate. A kind that's ravaging all that's beautiful, stealing the islands from those they belong to.
Take it easy, Red. I'm not here to stick your pretty island in my pocket when you're not looking. All I want is words with Lonnie Collier.
You're like the rest of them, trying with cunning and deceit to turn her head away from these shores and toward the mainland where you come from. I won't stand for it.
Why don't we break this round table up and get to the house? I'm in a hurry.
All right. But I'm sure that Lonnie will be on my side. So sure, in fact, that we really shouldn't disturb the flower. Should we?
Go ahead, we mother hit it!
In just a moment, the second act of Philip Marlowe. But first, this Wednesday night, Fred Allen will be Bing Crosby's special guest on Der Bingle's CBS half hour of laughter and music. Earlier this Wednesday, the winner of the $1,000 prize in the Dr. Christian Prize Contest will also be announced by Gene Herschel, star of CBS's Dr. Christian show. And don't forget that Groucho Marx and Burns and Allen will also be here on most of these same CBS stations this Wednesday. Now with our star, Gerald Moore, the second act of Philip Marlowe, and tonight's story, The Cloak of Kamehameha.
red-headed lunatic with a slow, soft voice and fast, hard fist took me by surprise. I wound up flat on my back before I realized he'd so much as moved. By the time I got to my feet and took after him, he was sprinting for a bamboo thicket and had a 30-yard lead. It was all he needed to lose me completely. When I finally untangled myself from the jungle, I came out on the road. But then I heard a motor behind me, so I dove for the underbrush again just as the heavy car roared by. I had seen it before. In fact, I'd been in it. It was the limousine that belonged to the Chinese. The back seat was empty, but the half-caste chauffeur, Jolo, was crouched behind the wheel like his life depended on it. Now, as I walked back toward the house, I saw that a door was standing open, spilling a shaft of yellow light across the dark grounds. I started up the walk when it came. A second later, Lonnie Collier burst into the path of light and ran for the open door. I went after her, caught her by one arm and spun her around.
No, let me go.
What happened? Why'd you scream, Lonnie?
Back there in the pond, I heard a noise, and when I came outside, I found him there.
Found who? Come on, show me.
All right. I talked to him just a few minutes ago.
Yeah?
I gave him the cloak. No, it's gone. He's dead with a knife in his back. There. Look there in the water.
Oh, brother. Who is it, Lonnie? Do you know him?
Yes, that's Philip Marlowe.
Skin on my neck crawled as Lonnie tagged the thing in the lily pond with my name. He was face down in the shallow water, and 3 inches of crooked steel in the ugly curved handle of a kris stuck straight up between his shoulder blades. Somebody had made a very grim mistake, but it took 5 minutes of argument and a thorough checking of all the credentials I carried to convince the badly frightened Lonnie. I dragged the body out of the water and up onto the grass. Then I went through his pockets.
What did you find?
A card. From the Hawaiian Island Art Products Company Limited, number 12, Harbor Street. Mean anything?
No. No, I've never heard it. What's that on the back?
Flight number and departure time of the plane I was supposed to take out of Los Angeles. Whoever he is, he's been one jump ahead of me all the way. Right up to your lily pond here. Tell me, was anyone with him when you gave him the cloak? A half-caste in a chauffeur's uniform, for instance?
No, he was alone. I gave him the cloak just as Schindler had instructed me to.
Now, listen, Lonnie, there was a down-at-the-heel redhead here just before you came out. He claimed to be a friend of yours.
Yes, that must have been Lawrence Cochrane, the poet.
They're making him rugged these days, huh?
Lawrence wrote one great poem years ago about two lovers who leaped to death over the valley to keep from being separated, and their souls turned into birds. It's still very popular here in the islands.
Yeah? What happened?
Lawrence got the habit of drowning himself in gin. And now the natives call him Papuli.
Papuli?
The crazy one.
Yeah, well, that's closer.
He's always hanging around. My mother wanted me to marry him at one time, and now that she's dead, he thinks he should look after me.
Okay, Lonnie, let him keep thinking so.
What do you mean?
I mean, you can use a good watchdog right now. Oh. So when Cochrane comes back, make him park on your doorstep. You stay inside and be careful. With guys named Philip Marlowe getting knives in their backs, I've got a few things to do myself, but fast.
All right.
I'd like to borrow that souped-up convertible of yours.
Where are you going?
Number 12 Harbor Street in the Hawaiian Island Art Products Company Limited. Harbor Street was a narrow, twisting alley 2 blocks below King Street. A social sargasso where the derelicts of the Pacific quietly foundered and died. Built into damp crevices between warehouses. However, number 12 turned out to be a practically blank wall. There was one small window high up. A door with a heavy iron grill over the glass on which Hawaiian Island Art Products Limited, I.K. Lee, president, was painted in small black letters. And a thin passageway blocked by an iron gate at the side of the building. A light burned inside, but the door was locked. So after I'd ruined my shoe shine and skinned all my knuckles, I managed to climb over the gate and edge down the passageway to the rear, where I could hear water running. A marble fountain playing in the center of a walled garden as oriental as the Forbidden City. I eased across its rigid daintiness to an open door, peeked in, and then reached for my gun. Because sitting inside at a sleek white mahogany desk was the Chinese in the Panama.
Well, this is a somewhat unexpected turn of events. Please, be careful with that gun, won't you?
You be careful, Lee. You won't have to worry about the gun. Tell me something. Why'd you break your neck to get Kamehameha's cloak? You know what'll happen if you try to sell it?
My good man,
I can sail that cloak every day for the rest of my life. A few feathers at a time.
Yeah? The world must be full of feather collectors.
Oh, it is. I manufacture the beautiful feather lace that islanders wear on their heads. And while the bird is extinct, desire for its gleaming feathers is not. One or two golden mammo feathers in each lay. And instead of a mere $100 apiece, I can get double that or triple. Now, do you understand, Mr. Marlowe?
You know, you got things a little mixed up, haven't you, Lee?
Mix up? How so?
Your boy Marlowe is dead at Lonnie Collier's place.
Oh, that. No, that was Mr. Blake. An easily accessible gentleman I hired on Main Street in Los Angeles. He only pretended to be you, for obvious reasons.
To intercept the feather cloak, huh?
Yeah. I've known all about Pollard Schindler's plan since their inception. I followed every move he made. In fact, it was I who caused all your trouble on the way to the airport this morning, by means of a bribe to your driver.
Too bad you won't be able to keep your nest lined with Kamehameha's bathrobe after all, Lee. Because I'm going to walk out of here with it, or big chunks of your face. You name it. Where's the cloak now?
I gather from this that you do not have it, Mr. Marlowe.
That's what's known as a shrewd observation.
And that Mr. Schindler, as I suspect, has tricked us both.
You're stalling, Lee. I'm warning you. Start talking.
Oh, that is all I wanted to find out. That is judo, Mr. Marlowe. Almost like magic, isn't it? Giorno can break your back if I tell him, Mr. Marlowe. You behave. Schindler has the cloak, no doubt about it. So I must find him at once with no interference from you, Mr. Marlowe. Giorno, you have his gun, so lock him inside. I may need him later.
Something the half-caste had done to my spine. At the edge of his hand, my legs were paralyzed. I felt like the practice dummy in a school for chiropractors. Every joint in my body ached when I moved. So I didn't move until the feeling oozed back into my legs. Then I wobbled to my feet and looked around. There was a small high window I'd seen from the street. A heavy chair, a desk with a lamp, and something like a picture framed in bamboo on the wall. I glanced at it and then looked back. Kept looking hard for a long, long time until I finally realized what it meant. The answer to the whole thing was contained in that bamboo frame. I had to get out and get out fast. I unplugged the lamp, plastered my back against the wall next to the door, and tapped on the lampshade to intrigue Giorno into coming in. It worked. When the knob turned slowly, I threw the lamp up at the window. The crash brought the door open with a jerk, and the jerk stepped in with my gun in his hand.
What's going on here, Mr. Marlowe? Where are you? Answer.
Right here, Cholo. Now get up. I got some magic to show you. A trick I learned in Kansas called the haymaker. I ran down the hall to the street door and out to the car. There was no traffic problem at that hour, so I jammed the gas pedal at the floor and held it there right through the heart of Honolulu and up the twisting road that led to the mountains back of the city. The echoing roar of the motor as it tunneled through the forest lining the road was finally replaced by another roar. Wind. The unending gale that shrieks through a precipitous pass 3,000 feet above the city. The Polly. I swung the car to the side of the road and ran the rest of the way. Out to where the rocks rose to a knife edge that dropped a sheer 1,000 feet to the valley floor. Then I spotted them. Lonnie lying at the cliff's edge and standing over her. His red hair ripped by the wind was the Mad Island poet. Drunk as a lord and flapping around his shoulders like a pair of huge gold wings was the cloak of Kamehameha.
No, don't weep, my love. I offer you the freedom of the bird. Come, Lonnie.
No, let me go, Lawrence. You're mad.
No, Lonnie, you're the mad one. To think you could sell your treasures and leave the island.
No.
Your destiny is here.
No, stop it, you murderous lunatic.
I tried to warn Schindler, but the fool kept on. So I killed his courier, the man you gave the cloak to. And I'd kill 1,000 times again to keep you here with me.
No.
You belong to the island, Lonnie, like this cloak and I. We must never leave.
No.
Come, it'll all be over soon, and our souls will turn to birds. and live forever in this paradise.
No,
Tucker,
no.
Stop!
Marlo, help me!
Stay back! Don't interfere!
Doc, Lonnie!
Are you all right, Lonnie?
Yes. I'm all right. Marlo, look.
The cloak.
Yes.
Cochran must have lost it as he fell.
And the wind brought it back to me. Oh, it's strange, Marlo, but I don't want to touch it ever again.
I know what you mean. I'll carry it. Come on, Lonnie, let's get out of here.
Nothing like ham and eggs and good black coffee in the morning sun to make one forget an ugly night. Right, my friend?
Oh, you're absolutely
that's
right.
That's all right.
More coffee, Phil?
Mm-hmm. Oh, thanks, Lonnie. Lee was picked up by the Honolulu police, huh?
Sure. I had it all set up. He'll spend some time in prison. Mm. And Jolo, too. By the way, he was still unconscious when we got to him. What in the world did you hit Jolo with, Marlowe?
Enthusiasm, mainly.
And that's when you got away and came up to the party, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Phil, how did you know it was Lawrence and where he'd be?
Well, it's all tied with that one popular poem that Cochran had written, Lonnie.
Oh?
That anonymous letter you got in Los Angeles, Mr. Schindler, was a line from that poem.
Oh, Kamehameha's cloak of golden feathers will bring no less than... How did you find that out, Marlowe?
Well, you see, when I was locked up in Lee's factory, I saw a full copy of the poem on the wall in a little bamboo frame.
Oh.
When I came to that line you just quoted, it stuck out like it was printed in neon. See, for me, that Peg Cochran is the killer. Going on that hunch, I try to look at things from his angle. He was a murderer, sure to be caught, desperately in love, insanely possessive of everything he thought belonged here in the islands. And he was an unbalanced lush as well. Rest of it figured, that's all.
Oh, I see. And when he was cornered, he went back to the one important thing that he'd ever done.
Exactly, Lonnie. He was lost.
Mm.
So he identified himself with the hero of his poem and took that as the only way out.
It's amazing. Yeah, truly an amazing thing.
Mm.
Oh, yeah, it's a terrible thing, too, Mr. Schindler.
Yeah. We all got what we went after, didn't we? Each of us. Even Lawrence Cochran. Left to catch a plane for the mainland, and Lonnie said aloha and left to get ready for our date. I sat on the lanai of the hotel and watched the sweep of the Pacific from Diamond Head to the hills across the harbor. The white sand of Waikiki to the green shallows over the reef to the purple depths beyond. As a warm wind whispered through the palms, from somewhere I heard the soft strum of the ukulele. It suddenly occurred to me, what does aloha really mean?
Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, are produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and are written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Featured in tonight's transcribed cast were Wilms Herbert, Lynn Allen, Jack Crucian, Dan O'Herlihy, Byron Kane, and Peter Leeds. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Arant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
This time a dead witness, a $100,000 bribe, the eyes of a beautiful dreamer and a corpse in a tool bin. We're all tied tight to the same thing, a fox's tail.
This is Roy Rowan speaking for CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.